The title I've chosen for my message today is Caring Relationships versus Relationships Based on Profit. Now, that's profit spelled P-R-O-F-I-T, not P-R-O-P-H-E-T. I'd like to begin with a reading of a parable from the Chinese Taoist philosopher named Chuang Tzu. As many of you may know, Taoism is a 2,500-year-old Chinese philosophy inspired by the sage Lao Tzu. And it merged with Buddhism as Buddhism migrated northward from India. Chuang Tzu writes, "Have you never heard of Lin Hui, the man who fled from Chai? He threw away his jade disc worth 1,000 measures of gold, strapped his little baby on his back, and hurried off." Well, someone asked him, "Why throw away a jade disc worth 1,000 measures of gold and hurry off with a little baby on your back?" Lin Hui replied, "The jade disc and I were joined by profit, but the baby and I were brought together by heaven. Things joined by profit, when pressed by misfortune and danger, will cast each other aside. But things brought together by heaven, when pressed with misfortune and danger, cling to one another." Well, before I comment on this parable, let me explain that heaven in the Chinese Taoist tradition is not the same as people might be accustomed to thinking of heaven in the West. It's not a place that one goes to after they die, but it's more like a state of consciousness or awareness which one feels connected on the level of the heart in a state of union and higher purpose. It is more akin to the Buddhist concept of nirvana, or like in the Gospel of Luke when Jesus is quoted as saying, "The kingdom of heaven is within you." We should therefore view this parable through a poetic lens. Using our faculties of insight, much of the Taoist teaching is meant to help us view life in more heart-centered ways. In this parable, I interpret brought together by profit as meaning relationships motivated by self-serving gain. Such relationships develop because individuals involved find there is a social, political, or financial advantage to the relationship. Whereas relationships brought together by heaven, I interpret as relationships based on caring and mutual love and support, without there being any preconceived social, financial, or political reward. It is implied in this parable that to escape, Lin Hui had to choose between the jade disc and the baby. Either the jade disc was too heavy or too large, since it was worth 1,000 measures of gold, or packing the jade disc along with his baby would have cost him valuable time needed to make his getaway. So in pondering the meaning of this parable, we can ask ourselves the questions, how many of our relationships fall into each category? That is, self-centered profit versus selfless caring. Are the relationships we have with people based more on profit, or are they based more on caring? I have to somewhat regrettably admit that throughout much of my life, my relationships have been most often rooted in profit. I would befriend somebody, develop a relationship, and work with them because I would see a gain, a personal gain, something to advance myself socially, politically, or financially. I suppose this is natural when a person is building their career, but since retiring, I've realized how much I've missed the blessings that come from nurturing caring relationships. A few years ago, I began reaching out to an acquaintance of mine from years past. He is now a Trappist monk at a monastery, the Monastery of the Holy Spirit in Conyers, Georgia. He is someone for whom there is no reason for me to be in touch with when it comes to profit. Our friendship offers me no social or financial gain or political gain. Yet, My heart finds solace whenever I think of him. Together, we share each other's thoughts and prayers, concerns, books, and articles. Somehow, we have been brought together by heaven in a caring yet distant relationship. Another person with whom I developed a caring relationship is with the late Alice Bennett, who was a member of this congregation. This may seem odd, given that Alice and I were galaxies apart when it came to how we perceived reality. Alice referred to herself as a non-believer. Well, I see myself as a neo-transcendentalist believer. Alice, being a scientist, viewed life predominantly through rational and activist lens. Well, my orientation to life is that of a poet, musician, and lover of the aesthetic dimension of life. Perhaps this is why we became friends, and we balanced each other out. And she would frequently invite me to attend the Sunday morning discussion group here at the church. A week before Alice died, I visited her while she was in the hospital awaiting some tests. That weekend, there had been a full lunar eclipse around midnight, a blood moon, as it's called, because the moon turns reddish. I wanted so much to see this eclipse, but the sky seemed hopelessly overcast. I had just about given up seeing it, but I kept the faith and tried one last time and went out at 11:45 p.m. To my astonishment, the sky had cleared and the full blood moon was visible from the deck of my house. The next day, I was so excited to visit Alice, knowing that being in the hospital, she had not been able to enjoy the eclipse. After I told her about how the sky had cleared just in time for me to marvel at the blood moon, I jokingly asked her, "So Alice, was my prayer being answered? Or was I just bloody lucky?" This question sums up the difference between the ways that Alice and I perceive the world. Astronomer Carl Sagan, who considered himself an atheist, once wrote, "Science is not only compatible with spirituality, it is a profound source of spirituality." In my book, Meditations on Mystery, I marvel at Sagan's relationship with the universe, how he could look at the cosmos with both poetic eyes as well as through his scientific lens, referring to the universe as the grandest of mysteries. His poetic lens was brought out in the movie Contact, which was dedicated to his memory. In this movie, actress Jodie Foster plays a young scientist who uncovered what appeared to be a signal from a distant intelligent civilization outside our solar system. After much political wrangling, she was given the opportunity to travel through a wormhole to this distant planet. While in transit, her capsule suddenly stops and presents her with a breathtaking view of the stars and the nebulae in the area of the cosmos through which she was passing. Overwhelmed by the magnitude and beauty of the panorama she was beholding, she says, "You sent the wrong person. You sent a scientist. You should have sent a poet." These influences, integrated with my artistic orientation to life, have led me to cultivate a poetic panentheist and neo-transcendentalist view of life. Panentheist, meaning that the divine is in and through all things. I chose the quote about mystery from Albert Einstein because I think it's important to hear these words of humility from some of the greatest minds in the scientific community. Nobel Prize-winning physicist Niels Bohr said, "Everything we call real is made up of things that cannot be regarded as real." Stanford University physicist Leonard Susskind, in his book with the amusing title, "The Black Hole War, My Battle with Stephen Hawking to Make the World Safe for Quantum Mechanics," concludes that this solid three-dimensional world is an illusion of a sort. He goes on to say that it should be evident that our naive ideas of space, time, and information are wholly inadequate to understand most of nature. Susskind asserts that we all need to rewire our neural networks to accommodate the new physics. After my feeble explanation into general relativity and quantum field theory, I've concluded that most people today are living in an antiquated Newtonian universe. Most of us fail to comprehend, for example, how when we use our GPS systems, time is passing at a different speed for the satellite in orbit than for the car we're driving here on Earth. Or that the material objects we interact with, which we experience as solid and non-moving, are actually made up mostly of empty space with atoms and subatomic particles in a constant state of motion and vibration. Or that 15.5 billion years ago, all the matter and energy in the universe, even time and space itself, were compressed under infinite gravity into a volume that is smaller than a proton. Seems incomprehensible. This is challenging for us because our brains evolved to survive in a universe as defined by Isaac Newton rather than by Albert Einstein. In Isaac Newton's universe, time is perceived as a constant rather than speeding up and slowing down, depending on the influence of acceleration and gravity. And space is perceived as flat rather than warped by gravity. Werner Heisenberg, who introduced what became known as the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, said, "Not only is the universe stranger than we think, it's stranger than we can think." Last August, while on the shores of Lake Michigan, I witnessed, to my astonishment, the fourth generation monarch butterflies starting their annual migration back to Mexico. And while most of us tuning in today accept life is evolving through the process of natural selection, it is still hard to grasp how the tiny brain of this butterfly could hold the algorithms necessary to go through its strange four-generational life cycle. Well, from profit relationships, we receive what we deserve and in the amount equal to what we put into the relationship. But from caring relationships, as I have experienced with my monastic Trappist friend, Alice Bennett, and the monarch butterflies, we receive not rewards, but unanticipated blessings that surpass our expectations. I am reminded of a passage in the Gospel of Luke where Jesus is quoted as saying, "When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your kinsmen or rich neighbors, lest they invite you in return and you will be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you." Now, I'm not wealthy enough to throw a banquet. But 2 years ago, a fellow named Leonard, I've changed his name for the sake of telling this story, a fellow named Leonard came to our house on Christmas Eve asking if he could give a ride, we could give him a ride to South Madison Street. He had been living in poverty for many years, and several times I had paid him to do some yard work around the house. I then would buy him a Subway sandwich and give him a ride to the bus station downtown. But he was now knocking on our door at 6 p.m. on Christmas Eve. Not good timing, to say the least. At the time he knocked, I was not home. I was at Hazelwood Christian Church preparing to play the prelude for their Christmas Eve service. My wife, Susan, texted me, upset that Leonard was at our door, and asked what we should do. I couldn't come home, so I asked her to give Leonard a ride to the Unitarian Universalist Church Christmas Eve service. I would then meet her and Leonard at the UU service, and after the service, I gave Leonard the ride he needed. He had clearly been moved by the service and expressed his appreciation many times over as I drove him to the location on South Madison Street that he wanted to go to. I also gave him a Christmas bonus. I have to say that I benefited more from what happened that Christmas Eve than did Leonard. So I think we should all ask ourselves to ponder the relationships in our lives and our motivations behind them. Which ones are rooted in profit and which ones are expressions of love and caring? In retirement, I've come to realize that it is possible to take a relationship that started for profit and transform it into one grounded in caring. Gradually, a relationship that began for self-centered reasons can grow into a genuinely caring friendship. In addition, we should not limit ourselves and not limit our concept of relationship to people. The COVID-19 pandemic should provoke us into considering our relationship with our planet. It should generate renewed interest in what some scientists have called the Gaia hypothesis. Named for the primal Greek goddess of the Earth, it was first proposed to the scientific community by chemist James Lovelock in the 1970s. The Gaia hypothesis views the Earth's biosphere as a synergenic, self-regulating system where living organisms interact with their inorganic surroundings in ways that maintain stability and homeostasis necessary to preserve life. The system has its own adaptive defense mechanisms that help ensure life survival when threatened. As a scientific theory, the Gaia hypothesis adds credence to the prophetic words of Dallas Chief Eagle, a Lakota Native American leader. Chief Eagle writes, "I look at Mother Earth as a relation of mine. I don't believe our fair Earth Mother can take any more of the abuse that it has been forced to suffer by man. And when the nervous system of the planet is upset, it has to readjust itself, just like any other organism. The Earth Mother has to make its own adjustments and return its balance. And when it does this, there will be catastrophes on its surface, and man is going to suffer." Well, this adjustment, as Chief Eagle refers to it, is becoming apparent, as in just 6 months after the coronavirus began its march across our planet, air quality in polluted cities like Rome, New Delhi, and San Francisco has improved dramatically. Sea turtles and other threatened species have started to rebound. Whales in the Pacific Ocean are able to communicate much more easily as a result of the cruise line industry being shut down. And with fewer passenger jets in the air and fewer cars on the road, humanity's carbon footprint is becoming lighter. The most invasive species on our planet, the human species, has been forced to retreat somewhat from its exploitive fossil fuel-driven economy. Mother Earth is reasserting her authority, stepping in on a powerful molecular level to constrain our planetary abuse and remind us that we are not in control. So in addition to pondering the kind of relationship you have with colleagues and acquaintances, consider our relationship to our planet and to the many non-human residents in the natural world. And consider how you can transform a relationship rooted in profit into one that is the expression of love and caring. Regardless of a person's religious or non-religious personal beliefs, we should learn to listen to each other's life stories and strive to become a caring community. People in Muncie who refer to themselves as spiritual but not religious seek congregations where there is warmth and acceptance. And that, I believe, is a vital component to what the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King called the beloved community. Let me close with a quote by author and motivational speaker Zig Ziglar, who said, "People won't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Amen.